Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Brainstorm. A lot of news has happened since we last spoke to you and we last spoke to each other. And the main one that we're going to start today off with is the Citrini piece is coming true. Block, Jack Dorsey laying off 40% of the workforce because of AI.
Is it AI or is it Jack Dorsey companies? The only two companies that have successfully laid off most of their workforce and have had no impact are Jack Dorsey companies. Is this an AI lesson or a Elon Musk productivity lesson?
I think it's both. I think there's definitely a part of this that has to be AI. And that's if you read his piece that he put out talking about why he's making this decision, he's saying he essentially had two choices. Do this slowly and gradually over time, or make the decision to cut all 40% upfront today and refocus the company and retrain everyone on AI, make sure the entire company is behind the AI movement. You know, I think when we were at the investor day, it was very clear to us that AI is a part of every single thing they're doing. And I've seen a lot of takes out there, and I'm sure we'll get into it here. Oh, well, this company was bloated. You're pointing this out. Yes, that may very well be true. But I think it's also important to note that this company, Block, had one of the best revenue per employee numbers out there within the fintech space. Better than Robinhood, better than Adyen, better than Stripe, better than most players out there. Toast, even on
this was at the peak.
This is leading up with 10,000 employees.
Wasn't that inflated by their Bitcoin sales?
So, yes, on a gross profit basis, Block pre-layoffs was at 1 million. So they're right in line, basically middle of the pack. Revenue basis, much higher, but you talk about the revenue per employee because of the Bitcoin transaction. But now post-layoff, they're now number two. The only company that they're behind is actually Robinhood. 1.76 million per employee on a gross profit basis, Block at 1.73. So they're now, top of the pack. They were middle of the pack. They were better than PayPal, Stripe, Adyen, and I'm sure if we went down a further list, this only pulled eight companies, they'd be higher than a lot of other companies in the fintech landscape.
And I would argue with the layoffs, they'll be even better and higher over time, because having a smaller team now allows you to, I think, ship more and do more. And so then deliver more services to people that they'll pay more for. And that doesn't mean the Citrini piece is coming true. Just because Block is going to be leaner and do more, that's good for everybody. That's even good for the employees that are getting fired that were sitting around doing nothing, because they'll go and find other interesting things to do with their life rather than, sitting in meetings and twiddling their thumbs.
But doesn't it somewhat give validation to the Citrini piece if you go and say, okay, now you have 4,000 workers unemployed, where do they go? Because if you look at the other companies, right, aren't they going to use this as cover to lay off their own portion of the workforce? Because make the argument that a lot of companies coming out of the pandemic were bloated, are still bloated. Like, look what you brought up.
Yeah, well, I think that's a nuance that you brought up, which is the key element here, which is it cover because, or is it actual productivity boom from AI? And I agree, it's probably both. But even without AI, all of these companies are bloated, right? It's like, forget AI. You could get rid of middle management in a ton of these companies. And that is that's like a real Citrini situation in the negative sense. Well, you don't get all of the AI productivity boom. The whole, if it is truly like because of AI, then that's a great scenario. That's like way better than all of these companies suddenly deciding that they want to run efficiently. Because now you have that X factor, and this is what's, I think, often overlooked with the Citrini piece, is that crazy GDP growth, right? It's like the fact that you have this magic tool that can make all of these people more productive, that's the whole point. It's like, that's why these 4,000 people are not going to be on the side of the road looking for jobs, but they can go and create incredible companies with this tool.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think that the core thesis of the Citrini piece is that GDP growth is 11% and consumption growth is collapsing. And that math just doesn't play. So we agree that GDP could exceed 10% by the end of this decade because of the fact that we all manually drive an hour a day and we don't get paid to do it. Robo taxis will free up that time to work, and we'll be happy to, even if we're not working, we'll be happy to pay for that freed up time. And so that'll go into GDP growth. And it, by the way, that also appears in consumption. The Citrini piece's core thesis is company is spending $100 million on employee labor, and instead they decide to spend $80 million and $15 million on AI, and then therefore that's a net contraction in spend. But that $15 million on AI has to be supported by build-outs of data centers that exceed $15 million, plus wages paid to the person who's working at the AI company. So there is a resource shift, as in a core like non-AI software as a service company is losing share to AI companies, but the people that are getting fired from that core software as a service company are going to go into the AI industry and find jobs there. And so
now,
what?
I mean, I think that's like a shortening window, though, because I do think like we're still talking about this as if AIs are tools to help humans be more productive. And I think where we're headed is agentic systems just completely replacing the individual.
Are your agents running for you right now while you're sitting here?
I'm not, but our job and what we're trying to do and discuss.
My agents are. I'm taking time to record this. My agent has stopped.
I don't think Jack Dorsey is thinking about it from what are the capabilities today. He's thinking about it. What are the capabilities in 2 or 3 years? I think every single company out there, every management team is asking the same questions. Can a human do this? Can a human do this better with AI? Or can I just replace this entire job function with AI, point blank, period? And I think the more that we talk about this, the more that I'm confused, because you were the one pointing out 2 years ago, like, look, this is as bad as it's going to be today. And that still stands true today with these systems. So if this is as bad as it's going to be, and I have a moment where I'm using AI almost on a weekly basis where I go, oh my God, I cannot believe it's capable of this. So just imagine 6 months from now and a year. And I think that's why these AI labs are going out there telling you, like, we are coming to replace your jobs. I mean, they're not saying it that directly, but they're basically saying we are making fully agentic systems to replace entire job functions, departments, not just individual jobs, just entire departments outright.
Luckily, we have a forecast for this. And so the way to think about it right now, AI being fully used by somebody makes them as a knowledge worker, you know, broadly defined, roughly 50% more productive. So you have to do one unit of human work and you get another 0.5 units of work out of the AI. And fast forward, even on our optimistic case to 2030, fully utilized, one unit of human work produces 10 units of output with AI. So what happens in that scenario? One, we get explosive economic growth, and that human actually gets paid a lot more because you are producing a lot. You're a lot more productive. There's like this idea that when the tractor came, suddenly, well, we're going to produce all the crops and therefore we won't have any other things to do. But no, you find other ways to be productive as labor in the economy. And then that labor piece still becomes the core, like the allocator of what is the AI doing? Where am I guiding it? Becomes more critically economically important. And so then labor actually captures, you know, per hour, you know, a much higher relative wage.
Wait, but for our listeners, I think it's important the back. Like, if you take a step back, it is extremely rare for ARC to be too early on a prediction, right? It's like we are quite aggressive. We are quite aggressive. And in this scenario, Brett is saying, no, it's going to take longer. And you're saying, no, it's going to happen.
Yeah, so which are nothing in the east.
That's what I'm saying. It's worth calling that out because this is the exact opposite of 100% of the conversations we've ever had about modeling anything.
But I think it's interesting that the individuals that are closest to the frontier, like what we're seeing that's been commercially available, that's probably a generation or two behind what Dario, Ewan, Sam Altman all have access to that's running behind the scenes at OpenAI, Anthropic, XAI. And they're the ones seeding this idea. Like, it's not like Citrini's idea came out of nowhere and this is like some magical idea they came up with. Dario's out there saying for the last 2 years that there's going to be 10% unemployment.
Why
would it be in their interest to say that at all if they didn't think that there was some potential that it could happen?
Well, one, that's a good way to sell product to a company that wants to cut costs is to say, I can replace human job function with this product.
But it,
too, I think Dario is just not a good macroeconomist.
But it can replace job function. Like, no, I'm using it. No. I'm like, okay, this is kind of scary for my own.
My own experience. Well, then you need to skill yourself up. My own experience. My own experience is I'm doing more work and producing more complex work and feel compelled to like work more. One, because it's a competitive marketplace of ideas.
Yes.
And like there is so much potential to model stuff in the world that right now is not very well modeled. And so I think that is happening across, you know, multiple functions in the economy, including people who are sitting inside big organizations. They're like, oh gosh, I'm watching the paint dry here. I could be doing so much more in the world. They fire that person. They're like, thank God I get my severance and I get to go and build something amazing. Yeah. Like if you look at the early stage AI software companies, their revenue growth is screaming. It's so much higher than anything we've ever seen. And so net, I think that there are definitely going to be job categories that are not as important macroeconomically. And though people in those specific categories will shift. But look at even travel agents. In 1990, there were 132,000 travel agents in the U.S. Today, after all the internet disruption and everything else, there's still more than 80,000 travel agents. That's a lot of travel agents. I don't even know what they all do. But so it compressed, and their aggregate salaries are also down. So not as valuable a function. What happened during that time is that the amount spent on airlines and hotels in the U.S. 4x from $200 billion to $800 billion on a real basis. And Expedia, Booking, Airbnb, they all emerged. And across those three companies, they pay more out in salaries than travel agents were paid in 1990. And they're collectively worth like $275 billion. So you created entire companies and industries that didn't really exist before, displacing a narrow job function partially, and ended up paying out more wages. So then just extend that across all of the things that, you know, we do and everybody else does. I think that's where we're going.
But it's complete intelligent replacement. And I think this is where it's different from all other analogies, where everything up to this point were really tools to help you do your job better.
Think about what you're saying when you mean complete intelligent replacement. Like, I buy AI services from an AI company. If it's complete intelligent replacement, that means that money has to go over there and it spins up a set of autonomous bulldozers and Optimus robots that goes out and builds the data center, installs the data center to service me, the person buying AI services. But that's not, we don't have the Optimus robots yet, or the autonomous bulldozers yet, or the autonomous AI agent that can negotiate.
Blue collar is a ways off from what I'm talking about. I'm talking about strictly white collar work, where the majority of your job is prompting something.
Are you worried about everybody's job, Nick? Or no, are you
saying
your job?
What I'm saying is that
your mid-year review.
What I'm saying is that there can be enough job displacement to cause a short-term problem. Because you can have companies like Block that go 40%.
Who is the problem for?
The economy. That, like, if there's another displacement before you can retrain that workforce, that is a problem.
They need to be retrained. They just need to use AI.
No, but you don't. But a company's not going to hire to use AI if they can just have someone at the company already do that work for you, or have an agent running in the background autonomously.
To close the topic, it would not surprise me if we see more knowledge worker layoffs here. I think there's a lot of bloat in companies. There's a lot of productivity possibility in existing incumbents. And I think you're going to have a sea of emerging kind of like startups that are producing amazing products and services in our AI native that are going to take all of that labor and deploy it really well.
With like one or two employees, though. Like, you don't need 100 or 200.
The good thing is we can track this, and we will track this.
Put it up on the screen.
There's a Kalshi market right now. Will the Citrini scenario happen? And it's trading at 13.9%.
Okay.
But yes, you go into the...
This is a good reason to read the underlying contract, because the Citrini scenario, what drives me crazy about it is GDP growth at 10% and consumption collapsing, which doesn't make any sense macroeconomically. If you read this contract, it's just basically, is there like severe unemployment? Is there a consumption collapse? It's really just a contract of, do we have a very severe recession or depression without any of the AI upside?
Okay, I'm going to segue here. On prediction markets, a lot of stuff has happened over the weekend. Iran happened, there was a prediction market on whether or not
the leader of Iran would be removed from power.
What happened, Nick?
Well, it seems, yeah, read the rules is what happened. And, you know, we're talking about the Kaushi market on Citrini, but, you know, this is another instance of needing to read the rules. It's very clear that this is going to be a continuation of a problem that I think has been persistent in prediction markets. But essentially, the rules stipulated that if the leader of Iran was taken out of office by assassination or death, that the market would resolve to no. People place bets.
Well, wait, no. The market would resolve. The market would resolve at the percentage at the time that the death was confirmed. So not that it would resolve to no.
Yeah.
It's just like if it was a 70% chance he'd be out by the end of the year, and he died, then it pays out at 70.
And this is in part because the rules and regulation that the CFTC outlines for prediction market, you cannot facilitate an assassination market. Yeah. You cannot facilitate any violent market. So they're like, stipulated within this contract itself, it had to exclude the potential scenario of death. And so this is an instance where, you know, there was huge backlash for Kaushi, for everyone involved here. And I think it's just, you know, there needs to be better transparency and tooling for these markets because it continues to happen time and time again.
Full disclosure, ARK is an investor in Kaushi in some of our strategies.
And I think they're best in class in doing this, but it's just, you know, when these markets are at the forefront, they're pushing the boundaries, the innovating, these markets are being spun up, you know, on a daily basis, you're going to have problems back and forth with this. So it's just something that I think they need to work through and help provide clarity and education around, you know, how to understand these markets. Make sure you open up the document, make sure you read through all of the subtext, the footers. You know, it's not just as simple as what the question, you know, states.
Right. Read the rules.
It is. Read the rules.
Okay, but I understand the violence is, I think, extremely easy to get behind, right? You don't want that type of market, right? You don't want to incentivize assassinations. What I am less certain of is there's been a lot of backlash on insider trading with respect to prediction markets. And I know there have been some political things that have happened, but to me, I understand prediction markets as being a way that surfaces insider information. And it's like, that's part of the value here is that you get people who know something to, without explicitly saying what they know, express that via dollar terms.
So the argument for disallowing insider trading in equity markets, for example, is that you want equity markets to be trusted and liquid so that you can provide capital to businesses to actually operate. And so if you have insider trading, then people will distrust the market. So you'll deny liquidity to the markets. So then businesses won't be able to use them to capitalize. And so then that's why you disallow insider trading. But in commodities markets, which is what, you know, is these are considered prediction markets, you don't have the same set of considerations because businesses aren't currently using these markets explicitly to capitalize themselves. So you just want actually a price that reflects that inside information so that businesses can make other allocation decisions on the basis of the information coming off that price.
Right. Insider trading should not be allowed. And I think
in prediction markets,
no, they should not be. Because what happens is, where do you draw the line of when an individual can influence the market? Because that is where you need to have a hard line in the sand. Because, you know, the cases that have come out, these individuals that are placing these bets had the ability to influence the outcome. So you could be this, you know, you see it a lot in sports betting, where you have, if you have individual players betting on their own props, that should not be what it grew with the integrity of.
I agree with that. It's like you shouldn't bet on something you can control. But if you're an aide in the room and you hear something, then it's like, yeah, you should. If you want to make money, you should. And then that's a signal that gives everyone else better information.
I hope the SEC is not watching this episode. But Sam, you're raising all torts. Compliance might not even let this through.
If there's a prediction market out there that allows, that facilitates any information, won't it gain market share over the others that don't?
And the utility of it is that it surfaces inside information. I agree. There's a problem of, like, you know, if I'm
we both agree.
If I'm the CEO that can, you know, control
How many times you say, you know, a funny word.
But that's, I mean, I think that's why you have to have hard and strict rules, because the lines get blurry very fast of like who can influence what, and this leaked out here and this person, like, you know, there's very strict rules around what is insider trading and what is not in the equities market. I don't know how you go and apply that to everything in the world. I think, you know, if I were to bring it back to the research we're doing at ARK with prediction markets, I think this is why having prediction markets surround the equity markets, individual companies, makes a lot of sense longer term, because you're piggybacking off of the rules and regulation. So I'm very bullish on prediction markets long term. I think a lot of the markets today don't survive because of some of the problems we're talking about. I just don't know how you regulate this without just having to shut down some of these markets completely. But I do think they survive by surrounding highly regulated industries where you already know what the rules are. So take the equity market, for example. An example I've been using internally is Tesla, right? We have all of these different events that are happening at Tesla, all of these catalyst events that we're, you know, internally trying to model. When would Optimus be commercially available? When would RoboTaxi roll out nationwide? All of those, I think, are going to be very liquid prediction markets in the future. And you already know what is and is not allowed when it comes to insider trading. That's kind of where I fall on this. Like, I think, you know, the narrative around prediction markets is too focused on markets that really just don't offer a long-term opportunity. Whereas, like, if you look at just the volume on a volume basis, like, even if you just look at where the narrative is today, it's in sports betting. 90% of the volume prediction markets is in sports betting. Sports betting globally, if you were to include gray markets, it's maybe a $500 billion a year industry on a volume basis. Derivatives tied to equities, commodities, everything that derivatives surround today, that's a $750 trillion opportunity. So you can just shave a percent, a couple basis points off of that, and now you're talking about a $1 trillion opportunity for prediction markets, and you don't have to deal with all of this messy insider trading. Like, there's just going to be, you know, I think a backlash, because you lose the integrity of these markets when you have insiders trading.
Right. Well, in the argument for, as these markets become realer and more useful, then they actually can become vehicles by which companies are capitalizing. And so then you do need people to believe in them and provide enough liquidity so that, for example, a partner of that company could successfully hedge risk.
Right.
Imagine you are someone who's going to be some kind of service provider to Tesla's RoboTaxi business. Well, you want to be able to sign a contract with them and protect yourself against the risk that they don't deliver the software that can actually make the vehicle operate.
But then in this example, doesn't it then make sense to regulate the industry and not the prediction market? It's like sports betting. There's sports betting rules about insider info.
Yeah,
that's great. Do that. Equities, there's that. But it's like four things that are outside of regulated areas. It's like,
well, then you need to add regulation into it, just because, you know,
but I'm sure I don't think you should regulate
wagers on.
Yeah.
That means you could catch the bad activity faster. Mm-hmm. Like, that's actually why legalized sports betting makes a ton of sense versus non-legal sports betting, because you can have point shaving, all of this bad stuff that they're starting to surface. That was all probably happening, just not getting caught because it was cash transactions with a local bookie, right? Like someone strong arming a college kid to shave a couple points off of his prop bet. Now, when that happens, if they're placing, this is how it happened the last year, they're placing those wagers on a DraftKings or a FanDuel. Their systems are immediately flagging that type of volume, saying this is irregular. And so you can have the same thing now happen with prediction markets. But the difference is, these markets didn't really exist for these industries. Like, you know, one of the most recent cases of insider trading was a Mr. Beast employee.
Yeah.
I haven't like gone deep into what exactly happened, but like those markets didn't exist for this type of activity to even happen. So it is a bit different in that manner, but I think like the focus.
What we've been saying from the beginning, regulate influencers.
Regulate everything. But cat's out of the bag, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know how you go back. I mean, maybe there has to be backwards regulations placed in.
All right. Do we want to touch on Anthropic in the next 3 minutes, or do we want to end it here and go our merry way?
I mean, I will briefly. So Anthropic got into a kerfuffle with the Department of War, as it's so-called now, because they tried to limit the Department of War's use of their Claude model. The Department of War said, no, you can't place limits on us, at least outside the bounds of what's already legally required of us. And so they very publicly broke up. I think then XAI has already signed a deal.
U.S.
And OpenAI announced that they had signed a deal as well. To me, it seems like, it doesn't make sense to say, I'm going to sell kind of this service to the government, and then I, the CEO, am going to retain the right to cut off that service arbitrarily because I'm uncomfortable with what you're doing. You either have to like do it by the bounds of the law that the government is like restricted by or not. And it seems like they're not comfortable with it.
Maybe a topic for another day. I know you and I have discussed this. I've discussed this with another friend outside of work, but companies as future sovereign entities. It's happened before in the past. Is this where we're headed?
What, like the India East Trading Company and stuff? Is this where we're headed? I mean, I guess the Elon Enterprises with like outer space assets and potentially colonizing Mars might be like the equivalent.
All right, we'll dive into that.
I think we should find some good examples of when this has happened in history, because I think it's out, there's a bunch. But just to go back to the Claude example, it is, you know, you're seeing it in the numbers, at least from an App Store perspective. Claude has jumped. It actually went from, I think, outside the top 10 from a free app to now the number one. It's over ChatGPT. So, you know, as much as this is a political stunt or they are standing their grounds politically, it is helping them in the short term. History would say that, you know, as a consumer facing product, you do not want to show any political leaning because you have an office that changes over every 4 years. And you don't want to be politically aligned with one administration over the other. From a consumer standpoint, like that doesn't work well over the long term. In the short term, you can have, you know, bumps. It's murky waters. I don't know. Tough.
All right. Well, it's good to be able to do this in person, and we'll see everyone next week.
ARK Investment Management LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public are separate, unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to any company marketing or selling the products or services of the others. ARK, Wolf Financial, and Public make no representation or warranties regarding and expressly disclaim any responsibility or liability for any acts, omissions, losses, or damages of the other entities or their affiliates, officers, employees, or agents. No company shall be liable for any indirect, incidental, consequential, or special damages arising out of or in connection with this podcast or its contents. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK, and investors should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in this show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statement. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.